Hello, welcome back, everyone. Next, I have the great pleasure of welcoming my friend Taylor Lewis, who has kept me healthy and mostly not hurting myself for the last 5 years because he's been my trainer and I adore him. He's a clinical exercise physiologist and pulmonary exercise researcher. He currently spends his time teaching, training, writing, and researching exercise science to improve the quality of life for those with CF through individualized training programs. In 2017, he founded the Cystic Fibrosis Fitness Institute, which is a subdivision of the Pulmonary Performance Institute. And PPI's mission is to help improve the quality of life in individuals with a pulmonary condition through exercise. Today, he's going to talk about strength building with CF. So please join me in welcoming Taylor.
Thank you, Julie. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be a part of this. So what I'm going to do with everyone is I'm going to share my screen so we can just get going here. And I'm going to leave some room open for questions at the end. So don't worry, we'll have them. And if I do not get to your question, I'll give you my information at the end to allow you to, if you want to contact me, I love talking about exercise and so we can set up a call or go through some emails. So today's talk is strength training in CF. And I want to first thank CFRI, Julie, Siri, the whole crew of CFRI for putting on such an amazing event and working with us to make this run very smoothly. Such a great staff and love the organization, been working with them for a few years now. So very appreciative of that. Who am I? So Julie kind of gave a little bit about who I am, but just a little bit more. I've spent 13 years as an exercise professional. I started my career as an exercise physiologist at a sports medicine clinic in Fresno, California. Then I went into strength and conditioning at the collegiate level, working with baseball athletes. Then over time, I was introduced to cystic fibrosis, and I shifted to spending time in CF and learning over the past 10 years. My mission is to help. My mission is to not only help educate, but bring the exercise literature that's been done by so many fantastic individuals into application for CF and other pulmonary conditions. Because sometimes it says, okay, we need to do something. Well, how do I program it? How do I put it together? What intensities? This is where I'm trying to bridge that gap. So then hopefully maybe by the time the end of this talk is, you have a better idea of what could potentially help you. The objectives for today's talk is why strength training is important in CF. I want to go a little bit through the science and then the application of everything. And then understanding musculoskeletal strength, okay? It's very key as we talk about exercise and endurance training, flexibility training, all these things, but I want to try to start to advance the talks on strength training in various fashions and stuff like that, because it's a really big beneficial component to exercise in any populations. It doesn't matter who you are. And then at the end, give you strength guidelines that have been put together for pulmonary conditions, just to give you a basis. Now, once again, everyone's a little bit different. So this is just a general guidelines to kickstart your program if you need something, or just to kind of reference in what you're doing. So we know CF is a multi-organ disease. You know, it affects the brain, mental health, cardiopulmonary system. It affects maturation along with other things. My goal today is really going to talk about more of the musculoskeletal and the skeleton aspects of strength training. One big thing though, when we're talking about CF, is improving lung function, especially when we're talking about exercise. The key is really, can we get lung function to increase with physical exercise? And we know you can, you know, and there's different avenues to do it. One avenue is always recommended is endurance training or cardiovascular training, rightfully so, because it helps work the cardiovascular system, helps improve the tolerance, and can improve capacity. Variations of that type of training could be aerobic training where you're on the treadmill, walking, running, hiking, or you could get on the bike to different variations. Or what's been popular lately is HIIT training. And there's lots of evidence to show that, you know, high intensity interval training can be a very important and powerful component to lung function and stuff like that. But one thing that not necessarily is often talked about in the beginning is the aspects of what the human body is doing during these movements, endurance, whatever it might be. If you look to the left, you'll see this person running, and you'll see the muscles, you see the joints, you see a whole system trying to accomplish something. And this is where strength training starts to take into factor of how this could be a missing link or help improve your lung function, is getting the whole system to work as a unit. So this is where strength training steps in. So strength training has shown to increase bone and mineral density, something that's often seen to be decreased in CF, increases skeletal muscle mass. Another thing that's been often seen to be reduced in CF, and combined with cardiovascular training, increases lung function. So oftentimes, like I said a second ago, is it's based on endurance. But when you actually combine them both, you could have a potential to increase higher, especially if you start to plateau, if you see, oh, I'm only doing endurance training or cardiovascular training, how can I get to that next step? And it may be integrating just a little bit of strength training. And one big reason why is if I'm going to target high intensity interval training, which has been a very powerful thing in CF, but it deals with a lot of impact. And when I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into this, but if you really want to dial the system up, you need some form of foundation to do that. And if you love to do high intensity interval training, well, oftentimes if we do too much of it, we can start to have joint pain, different issues. And sometimes we can reduce that by integrating strength training. And to kind of go over this a little bit more, is I want to take a step back and look a little bit more of kind of a science in a sense of what is occurring when we're moving. So Wolf's Law states that bone elements place or displace themselves in the directional forces and increase or decrease their mass to reflect the amount of functional forces. So if you decide to jump up and down, the forces that are generating when you land and they go through the ground and then drive right back up are going to play a factor in the skeletal system. Now, once again, let's say you have a little bit reduced muscle, that could cause a little bit more stress and can be prone for fractures or discomfort in the joints. And that is very key, because I've worked with people that have done HIIT training and they get to a certain point where they start to develop pain. And when we've integrated strength training, that's subsided, obviously, through a progressive program. So it's something to think about when we're trying to improve lung function or just endurance. During walking, every contact of a foot with the ground generates an upward reaction. So even at the lowest intensities, you getting up, walking around, you're putting force into the ground, and then that is being distributed right back up. And this can change and alter postures or formations of bones depending on the volume, how hard it is, or the repetitive component to it. So things are to consider, even at low intensities, we're generating forces. And then we have to start to integrate the laws of motion, Sir Isaac Newton's laws of motion, in a sense of when we start to increase accelerations, we start to change directions, and we start to integrate kind of the lifestyles around us. So a law of acceleration is acceleration of an object is dependent upon the net force and the mass of the object. So for instance, this an individual, and we'll use the kids jumping on the trampolines and stuff like that. Laws of reaction, a law of reaction is for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So as these kids jump in the air, depending on acceleration, mass, and other variables, when they go to land, it's going to recoil and propel them in a direction based on where their masses are going. So this is very key when we're talking about introducing cardiovascular training, in a sense, is when you go and run, depending on where you place your forces when you run, walk, hike, whatever it is, that's going to affect the outcome. And running forces, so as I talked about, as acceleration increases, as you start to increase speed, that force is going to increase. So if you start to run more, there's going to be more forces to the bones, the joints, the system. And this goes along with HIIT training. If you decide to do more jumps, you know, you try to jump higher or for more distance, that's going to start to change the outcomes, and something to consider when we're implementing these things. So how does strength training help the cardiovascular system and the endurance and this kind of format of training? Well, strength training increases the musculoskeletal system's ability to absorb force and distribute force. So let's say you decide to go for a run and you're going for 20 minutes. Every time you step, your body's distributing force. Now, as that force goes up the system, your muscles and joints are going to take that and calibrate it and then send it in the direction needed to get from point A to point B. Now, as you have an increase in strength, that's actually going to decrease the work in a sense, or it will allow you to move faster. So it could decrease the demand on your cardiovascular system, so then you can improve distance or reduce time. And then ultimately, this can lead to improving exercise tolerance. So sometimes, and I've anecdotally worked with clients where we've wanted to improve endurance with trying to improve lung function, and we integrated strength training, all of a sudden their times for their runs, walks, or their bike rides decreased, and they were able to improve their capacity because they kind of put them all together. And that's something to think about. So what is muscular strength? And I want to have a good definition as I move forward so you get a better understanding. Well, muscular skeletal strength is a given muscle or group of muscles' ability to generate muscular force under a specific condition. So in this instance, for this deadlift that this woman is doing, her body is recruiting a certain particular amount of muscles in a certain situation to be able to bring that bar off the ground. Now, as the weight increases on that bar, the demand is going to be higher. And eventually, they will get to the point if she keeps loading it up, she won't be able to do it. And that's where she's reached her thresholds. Now, depending on how many sets, reps, rest periods will determine how much you're going to be utilizing these systems. So something to think about is trying to generate as much force as we can through recruiting the proper amount of muscle conditions. And this is dependent on multiple things. And once again, it's multivariable. So your environment can affect it, how you sleep, nutrition. So there's other variables that go into this. But just to stay on this kind of path here, it's all about skeletal muscle size or the density of the muscle, and then neuromuscular recruitment. So your nervous system's ability to send and tell certain muscles at particular times to contract and relax based on what's required. And this goes from the messengers coming from the brain to the nervous system and then to the muscles at the neuromuscular junctions. So as a unit, these work to propel. Now, this requires a collective effort from the musculoskeletal and neuromuscular system to facilitate and coordinate the proper force generating capabilities within a specific condition. So what this means is, depending on what you're trying to accomplish, it's going to require a certain amount of the skeletal and neuromuscular system to be able to operate in that fashion. If not, then you will fatigue or you won't be able to complete that task. So when we talk about strength training, this once again varies based on what you're trying to accomplish. But we just have to understand that the musculoskeletal system and the neuromuscular system as a unit is working together collectively to try and create something to allow you to reach the outcome you desire. Muscular strength varies. So there is sometimes a connotation like, if I lift weights and get stronger, I'm going to get bulky. I've heard it many times in many different areas, populations. And that's actually inaccurate because there's various forms of strength. And this is why you kind of have to define what you're trying to look at. Where we have the Olympic gold medalist earlier from the Philippines, where she won in the snatch versus the guy on the right who's at the Arnold, who's lifting tires off the ground, to the lady in a yoga pose holding that. All of these are forms of strength. So we don't need to think, put strength in one narrow category and say, if I lift weights, or if I try to get stronger, I'm going to get bulky. That's inaccurate. Now, some people want to build some bulk. So that's a different component and that works, but doesn't mean if you lift weights, you're going to get bulky. So we should all lift weights. So let's look at the application of strength, because once again, it's all about how can I apply this? So I want to talk about the graded dose response. And this is where I'm bringing a little bit of science into the mix here to kind of give an idea. So a meta-analysis to determine a dose response, which means how many reps was put together to see over 140 studies they looked at. They wanted to see what was kind of that sweet spot from untrained and trained individuals of how much I can do to improve overall strength. So in volumes of sets, so how many sets per muscle groups people were doing, what they found was an effect size of the kind of the sweet spot was around 4 sets. But one thing with this that I always tell people to look at is when the thing is, if you look at 1 set, already there is an increase as you go to 2. So what this means is doing 1 set per muscle group still can be a positive outcome over a period of time. So it's not like I have to do 6 sets of an exercise to get optimal gains. That's not necessarily the case here. Now, when we're talking about training intensity, which is how much weight is lifted, they looked at and saw that around 60% of someone's 1 rep max, which I will discuss a little bit further soon, was really good for untrained to see this kind of optimization of building muscular strength. So if you're a beginner, you don't need to be lifting extremely heavy weights. You just need to start to increase the weight as you get better. It's even seen even at 40% that there was positive gains. And then if you're a trained individual, and this was looking at people that had been working out for over a year, they saw that those gains started to increase more when they were at 80%. So as you get better at something, you're going to want to increase the weight, else it gets easier, and then you're not going to see that kind of linear progression there. So the results showed untrained individuals, their sweet spot was about around 60% of 1 rep max or 12 reps per exercise, 2 to 3 days a week per muscle group. And then trained individuals was more 80% at 2 days a week, with the sweet spot being for both around 4 sets per muscle group. Now time and life is a factor. And this is why I want to come back to this. Something is better than nothing, which means if you go into the gym and you have 30 minutes and you want to complete strength training or integrate it, but and you don't want to skip it, doing 1 to 2 sets can be beneficial. Because we think about exercise, it's a long-term journey. You're not going to get absolute strength in one day. It takes time. You can talk to the strongest people in the world and it says it takes 10 years before they reached a certain level. So you don't need to get discouraged when time is a factor. The research shows that doing something is better than doing nothing. So that's something to consider as you start to potentially integrate this into your routines. So where do you start? So we know that, you know, strength training works. So where are we going to start? The question is it free weights, machine-based? Well, it's a combination of both, you know, and sometimes we overthink things and we get in as like, well, what's the best way? It's like, well, first, I mean, as simple as anything is just start somewhere. And I'm going to go dive a little bit deeper in the difference in free weights and machine based. But once again, they're both very optimally. If it's resistance bands at home, same thing. The key here is just as it gets easier, you want to increase the resistance or the load that which you're working with. And I'll give you a couple tips on if you don't have a lot of weights on how you can do that as well at the end. But the real big key is when we're lifting in strength training, you want to think of the bigger picture. We call these the fundamental human movements, the movements you do every single day of your life that you may not think. This goes all the way down to the unconscious movement patterns that we create. Okay. And we want to integrate these into our routines. And these are push, pull, squat, hinge, and core-based exercises. These are the fundamental movements of how we move every day. And I'm going to dive in a little bit deeper of why this is important. So the fundamental human movements, pushing, this works the chest, the shoulder, stuff that pushes away from your body. Pulling stuff towards your body, works more of the posterior chain, the back, you know, something that's very key, especially when we're talking about having poor postures or rounding. When I do pulling exercises, it kind of opens me up and balances the front and back sides. Squatting, getting down to pick things up. We always do it, whether it's toys for the kids, family members, moving boxes. We're always doing a variation of squats. This works the quads more of the front side, that anterior front side of the legs, calves, glutes. Hinging, this is where we hip hinge to go pick something up. Ideally, this is going to get some hamstrings, glutes. You see, this is more of the posterior side of the body. So what you're seeing is we're trying to do, trying to incorporate strength training that works the front side of the body and the back side of the body, and then balancing it between both sides. And everyone is different, so everyone's going to program slightly different because we sometimes need a little bit more of one versus the other. And then core. When I talk about core, I don't necessarily mean these rectus six-pack abs in the front. Now, what's key here is really working the deep core muscles And then also the superficial ones like the obliques. These are the muscles that really get you to move from left to right, A to B. The ab muscles in the front that tend to be correlated with core in just the general world, that's more of a show. Yes, they flex you, but functionally, they don't drive what we're trying to accomplish. So I'm not saying don't skip out on those muscles, but we really want to target those obliques, the deep transverse abdominis, all the deep core muscles. And why? Because it comes back to gait, walking, running, moving side to side. That's the key. As we integrate strength training that's more towards fundamentally movements through the day, you'll start to see yourself move easier, which then is going to require less of your cardiovascular system and cardiopulmonary system to give you the energy needed. So then you can decrease fatigue. All of a sudden you feel better, you move better, your mental health starts to increase. So we want to start to think, move with ease, and use what we do in the gym or at home to set us up for success when we're out during our daily lives. So going to the compound to isolated movements. So some people like to use more machine-based, and others like to do more multi-joint exercises. I always recommend telling people to do both. Now, once again, there's a difference. So when we take that step back and talk about Wolf's Law, when we generate force into the ground, we're going to then get a reaction back up through Newton's laws. So doing weight-bearing exercises are not going to only help target multiple muscles, but it's also going to help bone mineral density. Because you see on the right, there's not a weight-bearing aspect to it. Doesn't mean it's not wrong. It's just you want a collaboration of both, so then it makes that transition easier. One thing that's often talked about, especially from clients I work with, is when we do compound movements, it's not actually the muscular fatigue that happens. They get shortness of breath, and their capacity isn't at the level to get the stress on the muscles that they would like. So what I like to do is we start with compound muscles, maybe for the first exercise, and then as the fatigue increases, take some time off and then target isolated positions, because you want a combination of both. I want to build strength, but sometimes you just don't have that capacity if you do multi-joint or compound exercises because it takes up a lot of energy. So I always tell people, it's like an hourglass. When you go into the gym or you start your workout, you tip that hourglass over. There's only so much energy you have for that workout. So I always like to tell people, do the harder parts first. And that's not necessarily doing cardio first and then strength training. You actually want to flip that. You want to do strength training first, and then end with cardio if you're combining them. But in this instance, do compound exercises first and then move to the weight machines. Now, if you're just getting started, don't be scared where you're like, well, I don't feel I have good form here. Start with machine-based and then shift over there as you start to get comfortable. Once again, there's no set stone, but just to think about how you can integrate this in a more functional manner. And I always tell people, train in every direction. That's the key. If you look at your program and everything you're doing is forward to backwards, and we're not doing exercises that move us side to side, then you're not able to target the muscle's optimal potential, because muscles work in three-dimensional, or what we call triplanar, which means when I go to step, a muscle may be producing me to accelerate forward, but it has other components to stabilize in other directions. So think, train every direction, and you can split it up throughout the week. You don't have to do that every week or in every workout. So training recommendations. So this is key just to start. And once again, every individual is different. So you may start a little bit when you talk about, these are just basic guidelines to start. So strength. So if you're trying to build that muscular strength, you want to think frequency of two to three days a week. And once again, based on the literature I talked about, you could start with, you know, just 2 days, okay? And it doesn't have to be a lot. And then intensity, 60% of your one rep max, which I'll discuss in a second, how to kind of see where your one rep max is at, and 2 to 4 sets per muscle group for 8 to 12 reps. Now on that literature I talked about, people saw gains with one set. So if you feel that you're not at that capacity to do 2 to 4 sets, start with one set. Start basic and then just start to build and just keep moving forward, because it's more about consistency over the long haul than trying to start with 4 reps. And then let's say that you're like, you know, I'm very deconditioned, I just want to start a little bit lighter. We'll start with strength endurance, and that's 2 to 3 days a week of intensities less than 50% of one rep max. and 1 to 2 sets per muscle group, but you see it's more 15 to 20 reps. So there's kind of an inverse relationship. As the reps increase, the weight you're able to lift is going to decrease. So you're going to want to start to change that. So 15 to 20 reps, you're going to feel a good burn. But when you're trying to build that strong foundation, you're going to want to reduce the reps and start to build on that capacity there. And you can vary too throughout the year. So going to the training loads and stuff like that. So talk about 60% of one rep max. So let's just say this individual benched his one rep max, meaning he benched one time 100 pounds and he couldn't do two. Okay, that would be his one rep max. Now, if he wanted to do 12 reps, he would go to the chart, and this is the National Strength and Conditioning Association's strength training chart. He'd go 12 reps and he would go down and it would be 70 pounds because 70% of 100, which would be his one rep max. So it gives him an idea of where to start if he wanted to do 12 reps. Now, not everyone has the ability to go into the gym and lift or doesn't have that the weights at home to do it. So another thing is you can do rate of perceived exertion. How hard is the exercise? I always tell people that when you're trying to build that strength, you want it to be above a 6. So those last couple reps, if you're able to get them done and it was easy, you're like, okay, it's time to increase the weight. If you're like, oh, well, I only had one more rep in me, maybe you stay there until you can increase. So at the very end of that exercise, so if it's 8 reps, 6, 7, 8 should be hard and very difficult because you're trying to increase the threshold to kind of build that foundation. So the exercise outline, once again, push, pull, hinge, squat, groundwork, loaded carry. If the only thing you take away today is integrate these movements into your workouts. And just a quick example workout, if you worked out 2 days a week, okay, in the gym or at home for strength training, you'd probably want to do a full body workout, which means you work the legs and the upper body. Now, if you train 4 days a week, you can go upper body, lower body, upper body, lower body. But for instance, with this one, we do day one, strength A or circuit one, will some people say is like 2 sets of 8 reps. You're going to do dumbbell lunges for 8. And I always tell people, since this is a compound exercise or multi-joint, it's going to increase the intensity of the body. So I always tell people, add a mobility drill, something to recover from, or a stretch. So if there's areas of your body where you feel restricted and you like to stretch, integrate that after your hardest exercise. So then you're not just waiting around being like, all right, let me wait 2 minutes, I feel better. Start to add density to your program. And then strength B, well, I did quads and glutes, and since I'm only working out 2 days a week, I'm going to work more of the back. So I worked anterior side of my body. I'm going to work the posterior side of my body. Machine-assisted pull-ups is a great one for the back, and then bird dogs. And this is very similar to day two. Same thing, except we're working legs and upper back once again. And that's just a two-day program. And this is because the body is built to move. So you want to train your body to move and you just load it. And once again, always think quality over quantity. You're going to vary that because once again, one day you may lift and feel strong and the other day you may have to pull back. It doesn't matter. Just keep integrating those human movements. So the key takeaways, don't skip strength training. Even if it's 1 day a week for a couple sets, just don't skip it. Compound and isolation training when you're ready. So multi-joint free weights is very good. And then isolate the muscles if you're trying to target something. And little and often over the long haul. Once again, consistency is key. It's better to do 20 minutes on a Monday and then skip it and then have to go back on Monday and repeat because your body will start to adapt. So just give yourself a break sometimes, do what you can and just keep checking the boxes. So I want to thank everyone for joining me and listening, and I'll be happy to take any questions, and any questions I'm not able to get to, I'll be happy to talk to you later at some point about those questions. Also, here's all my information, so you can always email us or anything, and I'm always the one answering the questions, so please do not hesitate to reach out. So I will stop sharing and answer any questions people have.
Unfortunately, we don't have time for questions, okay. But if you type them in, the CFRI staff will make sure to get them to Taylor so that he can get back to you.
Sorry about that, everyone, but I will definitely get back to you on any questions you guys have.